So it's the Sunday after Easter. I'm going to start off with a reading from the latter part of the Easter story. In John we read that Mary stood outside Jesus' tomb weeping, and that as she wept, she bent over and looked in the tomb and saw two angels in white sitting where the body of Jesus had been lying, one at the head and the other at the foot. And they said to her, "Woman, why are you weeping?" And she said to them, "They've taken away my Lord, and I don't know where they've laid him." When she'd said this, she turned around and saw Jesus standing there, but she doesn't recognize him, according to the story. And Jesus says exactly the same thing, "Woman, why are you weeping? What are you looking for?" Thinking that she might be a gardener, caretaker, she said, "Sir, if you've taken him away, let me know where you've taken him, and I will take him." And then Jesus says to her, "Mary," and she turns and says to him, "Rabbi," or teacher. Jesus then says, "Don't hold on to me. I have not yet ascended to the Father, but go and tell my brothers, tell them this, I am ascending to my Father and your Father." That's an important thing to hear. My Father and your Father, my God and your God. And Mary Magdalene went and told the disciples, "I've seen the Lord," and shared with them the things that he told her. According to each of the Gospels, it's Mary who finds the empty tomb, encounters the risen Christ, tells the other disciples what has happened. And as the various Gospels indicate, this has to be a profoundly moving experience, a very deep experience for her that morning. But what I want to investigate today is, what did she do the next day? Or the next week, this being the next week. Certainly she would have taken time the next day or the next week for her daily prayers, perhaps hoping that through prayer she could connect with him again. But after that time, she probably, in the morning, went to the local well to draw the water for the day, ground some meal to make bread, and went on with the daily activities of her life. I titled today's talk, "After Easter." You know, there's a saying in the East, you know, before enlightenment, chop wood, carry water. After enlightenment, chop wood, carry water. So we might think of it in terms of before the mystical experience, no matter how profound, or before the healing experience, or the understanding that shows up for us. Before that, we still have to go to work. We still have to shop for the groceries. We still have to help care for family and friends. We still have to do the laundry. And after that wonderful, profound experience, well, the next day, we get up and do the same thing again. It's interesting because some people seem to be looking for some kind of a special spiritual experience that will lift them completely out of having to deal with their day-to-day life, that will just cause such a change in them that they will no longer have to deal with the world around them. Perhaps that might happen for someone somewhere. I haven't bumped into anyone that has happened to yet or read about them. For most people, a healing experience, a mystical experience, ends up in the long run being another stepping stone on a pathway before them. An important stepping stone, but yet another step on a pathway that continues to open up before them. Not the end of the road. A pathway that continues to open up, and I don't know, may just always continue to open up. What if there's not an end to the path? The good news is that with each moment of spiritual connection, with each inner healing, with each mystical experience that might happen, big or small, depending on how we judge it, what tends to happen is we tend to notice the pathway a little more clearly. as it opens up in front of us. We tend to notice what's in front of us a little more. And we also tend to have an easier time dealing with the ups and downs of daily life that we encounter. But one mystical experience, no matter how seemingly profound, does not mean that we have arrived at the end of the path. After Easter, we all still have work to do. I would assume that Jesus' closest followers and disciples, including Mary, already knew that. They had been with this teacher for a long time. They'd had some profound teachings. They'd probably seen many wonderful things happen. They may have had other experiences in their lives. But yet each day they still had to do their equivalent of chopping wood and carrying water, while continuing to do their prayer practices and their spiritual practices at the same time. So after Easter, the week after, or the weeks after, they eventually each return to their home and return to their daily lives. A little later in the Gospel of John, we read about some of the fishermen returning to their work. It says, Jesus showed himself to some of the disciples by the Sea of Galilee. Gathered there were Simon Peter, Thomas, Nathanael, and the sons of Zebedee, that would be James and John, and two other disciples. And Simon Peter says to them, I'm going fishing. Well, of course he would say that. He's a fisherman. That's what he does. And they said, we'll go with you. And they got into the boat, and they fished all night, but they caught nothing. And just after daybreak, Jesus is standing on the shore, and the disciples don't recognize him, similar to Mary's experience. And he calls out to them, children, you don't have any fish, do you? It's a great thing to call out to fishermen, isn't it? Think about that. Didn't catch anything, did you? And they said, no. And then he says to them, cast your net on the right side of the boat, and you'll find some. Hear that as a metaphor? Hear that as a metaphor. Cast your net on the right side of the boat, and you'll find something. You'll find what you're looking for. So they did. And they weren't able to haul in the load because there were so many fish. Now this is the Gospel of John, so it's written from the perspective of that writer. We read, the disciple whom Jesus loved. I always think of the Smothers Brothers when I hear that. As the disciple John always refers to himself as the disciple Jesus loved best. It is the perspective probably of the writer. I assume the disciples knew they were all loved. That disciple says to Peter, it's the Lord, because in this book, this disciple always spots what's happening. And then Peter, of course, who hadn't realized that, when he hears this, he puts on some clothes because he wasn't dressed, and he jumps into the sea and starts swimming to the shore. And the other disciples come with the boat, and they're dragging the net full of fish, for they were not far from the shore. When they'd gotten ashore, they saw a fire there and fish roasting on it and some bread. And Jesus says to them, bring some of the fish that you've caught. And again, I hear that metaphorically. Come bring, show me some of what you've caught. What have you been finding, my friends? What have you been finding? And Simon Peter hauls the net up ashore, 153 fish. Although the net was very heavy, they didn't tear. And Jesus says, come and eat. And none of the disciples dared to ask him, who are you? Because they knew. And Jesus took bread and gave it to them and fish also. The fishermen among the disciples returned to their fishing. And they continued to remember Jesus. And they continued to remember. In fact, they actually continued to encounter that presence, in this case, in bodily form. This could be weeks, maybe months later. Our Bible doesn't tell us when this actually happens. We might understand that Jesus' work in a physical body was pretty much done by Easter. His work here in spirit continues on. But the disciples' work in their bodies continues. Hopefully, after the Easter experience, the disciples were a little more present maybe a little more mindful as they went through their daily lives. Mindful of what they were doing, mindful of the others around, more conscious. Maybe their lives took on some new meaning. In unity, we remind people that Jesus, before his ministry, had an ordinary life, a life like you and me. Water to carry, wood to chop. At some point, he makes this connection, this divine connection, that is a lasting connection. And at that point, when people encounter him, my belief is instead of seeing a human being standing there, or a great teacher, or even a prophet, what they experienced was that presence or that spirit that shone through him so profoundly, it was probably a little confusing for them. Probably more than a little confusing for them. But very beautiful. Very beautiful. Unity co-founders Charles and Myrtle Fillmore referred to that part of Jesus as the Christ. Christ meaning God's anointed. The Christ in Jesus. Or as Paul writes, Christ in you. Your hope of glory. That presence that is in each one of us. Now, I don't know any people that hung out with Jesus. They seem to have all moved on. But I've met some people who spent time with some very highly evolved Eastern teachers, teachers in whom that Christ presence, that radiant God presence, was quite noticeable, easy to see and feel. Each credits their teacher with helping them find that and feel that in themselves, find that Spirit of God in themselves. And of those that I've known, the teachers have all moved on. They've all left their bodies and moved on. And each speaks of a real sense of loss when the teacher dies, when the teacher leaves the body. You see, for many of them, the teacher had been their primary link with God. Seeing the presence of the divine in the teacher had been their way of connecting with God. At least the easy path. At least the easy path for doing it. And that was now gone. So in addition to losing a teacher and a friend, they had also lost that easy connection to something higher. I know one who had was actually a long-time teacher for his teacher, meditation teacher. Actually left his career for a number of years, left his spiritual teaching for many years. Went back into the world and taught and worked. Until he finally was able to make it past that loss of connection, refind his connection with his teacher, and begin teaching again. Many speak of the loss of the support of having the teacher present. Others are able to connect with the spiritual presence that was in the teacher. For them, it's a little easier. So working with a spiritual teacher, my point here being, or teachers, can help us begin to build a foundation through which we can begin to connect directly with God, with Holy Spirit, with Spirit. It can help us strengthen our faith enough so that we can make a real and lasting God connection. But we can't just ride on the coattails of others. The work is ours to do. That's what After Easter is about for me. It's about doing our work. And this is where the words prayer practice and spiritual practice begin to take on real meaning. We all know that we need to practice music if we want to be able to play an instrument or sing. You can't just decide you're going to do it. You got to practice. We understand the need for regular practice if you want to be able to run or swim or bowl or play tennis or crochet or cook. You got to practice. Weeks, months, years. If you think about it, practice of any kind for anything we do is basically focused attention. Think about practice that way. The first part of practice is focused attention. And then whatever action or activities are needed to help move into that thing that you're practicing. And if you pair that with work over time, things begin to grow in you. Spiritual practice is basically the same thing. It's a focused attention along with an intention. I think this is equally important. An intention to connect. Attention and intention over a period of months and years. With practice, it produces results. The interesting thing is the results that we get are generally much more than what we thought we were going to have happen when we started off. In fact, when we started off, we might not have really had any idea what to expect. But with practice, things begin to shift. So even when we have a spiritual teacher present, or a group of committed friends who are here to support us, there is still the need for our own daily work. A truly great musician will tell you that it takes many, many years to become familiar enough both with their instrument and with the body of musical work that they can offer performances that seem effortless and flowing. Think about that for your spiritual practice. Dedicate that time, as we're being asked to dedicate that time to our becoming familiar with but not just our body, but also that which lives inside us and that presence of consciousness that we get to work with, that we get to work with. That produces our God connection. So before Easter morning, Jesus and his disciples all got to get up each day and do their equivalent of chopping wood and carrying water every day. And each had to do also his or her individual spiritual work, their own personal prayer work. After Easter, the disciples got to do the same. Even after the big miracle, even after the big loss, theirs was still there to do the same. I believe that in time, just like Jesus, we will each find and follow the pathway that leads to our spiritual opening, our spiritual connection, that leads to what we now speak of as God or heaven, but which we really don't understand, do we? Little glimpses, little glimpses. Gratefully, we have still Jesus' examples and his teachings, and also the teachings and examples of other great spiritual teachers to help us along the way. Here we also have the support of friends and others in the community to help encourage us and support us to continue moving forward down the path. And of course, as I like to remind people, we also have the support and the love of many others that we don't see, that are very much present here with us, encouraging and helping us. Some people experience Jesus in that way, as one of those unseen others. So, after Easter, our work, as it might be, our equivalent of chopping wood and carrying water, is to develop a regular practice for focusing our attention and our intention. Focusing attention and intention in a spiritual direction. And trusting that as we do our part each day, we too will continue to be divinely guided and supported along the path of our spiritual awakening. So I put a simple little affirmation in the back of today's bulletin, and it's actually the same one that's in the bulletin this week. It says, "My prayers, my intentions, and my daily practice are my pathway to God." Let's share that together. Together we say, "My prayers, my intention, and my daily practice are my pathways to God." Let's say that again together. "My prayers, my intentions, and my daily practice are my pathways to God." Close your eyes and let that settle in for a second. Because this is a very personal journey we're on here. Yes, we are supported. Yes, we have lots of love and support. But our prayers, our individual prayers and our prayer time, our intentions to connect, our intentions to experience that presence, and our daily practices, the way we put our prayer life into practice, not just when we're seated in prayer, but as we go into the community. What are your practices when you're in the community? What are your practices when you're chopping wood and carrying water? How do you approach that? How mindful are you as you do those things? Our prayers, our intentions, and our daily practices, those are the things that help us open up and find and see the pathway to God, to heaven, to that greater reality that is present for us, here among us, but we overlook it. After Easter, prayers, intentions, daily practices. These are the things that lead us down the pathway to God. So I invite us to open our eyes and to share that affirmation together again. Together we say, my prayers, my intentions, and my daily practices are my pathway to God. One last time. My prayers, my intentions, and my daily practices are my pathway to God. So it is. That's our work after Easter.